What if kittens played the glockenspiel? And what if unicorns were real? What if you could fly or travel back in time? We welcome you to What If World. What if world? This is What If World.
Hey there, folks, and welcome back to What If World, the show where your questions and ideas inspire off-the-cuff stories. I'm Mr. Eric, your host, and today we're starting off with a question from a listener named Nia.
Hi, my name is Nia, and I like axolotls, and my what-if question is, what if Grandma Olm convinced Avitus P. Grumbler to do a spell where all the good people turn bad and all the bad people turn good? Bye, love the show.
Oh, thank you, Nia. You're clearly all caught up on the latest What If World news. But for those of you who aren't, Grandma Olm is a mysterious new creature from another universe who seems to run a business known as Cramazon and has been selling cheap but elaborate costumes to everyone in What If World. Now, Detective Alabaster Zero thinks that the villain Wardrobe is somehow involved, because Wardrobe is a master of making costumes. But Alabaster hasn't been able to prove it yet, or even find the villain. Meanwhile, the wizard, known as Professor Abacus P. Grumbler, got trapped inside a crystal ball during What If World's most recent catastrophe. And President Kathunkle, who is a giant extra-dimensional squidipus, and was just elected to his new job as president, hasn't figured out how to free Abacus from the crystal ball just yet. Now, you don't have to listen to any of our recent stories in order to enjoy this one. But of course, you're always welcome to. We're going to answer one more question from a listener named Elle, but we'll keep that as a secret until later. So for now, let's find out what if Grandma Olm convinced Abacus P. Grumbler to do a spell where all the good people turned bad and all the bad people turned good. Your story starts after a quick break. Abacus P. Grumbler was one of What If World's most powerful wizards, and Kathunkle was certainly What If World's most magical interdimensional squidipus. And yet, for weeks, neither one of them had been able to figure out how to release Abacus from his own crystal ball.
No, Kathunkle, what am I supposed to do? The Sorcerer's Symposium is tomorrow, and I was slated to be the guest of honor,
said Abacus P. Grumbler, who fortunately could still speak and hear and see while trapped within this glowing sphere.
Maybe someone at the symposium can help,
said Kathunkle, who had shrunk his form down so that he was able to fit inside Abacus's study and the large building known as the observatorium.
I was nervous enough to speak as it is. Now I'm supposed to have you carry me around all day while I beg all the greatest minds in What If World for help,
griped Abacus.
No, not at all,
said Kathunkle in his most reassuring tone.
Because I won't be there. I've got to actually start doing president stuff, you know.
Well, that's a major problem.
Then you know what you must do.
Oh, I do.
And they both recited the phrase that they'd been hearing over and over again recently.
Stuff away your problems.
It was part of Cramazon's new ad campaign, Stuff Away Your Problems. And while Abacus didn't agree with it the first time he'd heard it, he'd been seeing it and hearing it on every billboard, podcast, and radio station for the last several weeks. And now it started to sound like it made sense.
Okay, Kathunkle, could you order me some stuff from Cramazon that can get me to the symposium without your help?
I already have, older friend.
I wouldn't say we've been friends for very long.
But you are old, yes?
Maybe you should order something from Cramazon that teaches you some tact, Kathunkle.
I suppose I could return this magical staff I bought you and use the credits.
Magic staff? Gimme, 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 gimme!
And Kathunkle produced a long and thin cardboard box from one of his many extra-dimensional pockets, handing it to the wizard.
Who has no hands? Could you please open it too?
Oh, sorry, yes, of course.
It was a fine staff of old, gnarled wood. The kind that could amplify a wizard's magic, or anyone else's for that matter.
Perhaps if you fix my crystal ball to the top of this staff, I'll be able to access some of my magic again.
And I'll still keep looking for a solution, Abacus. But this way you won't have to travel around in my
slimy folds of squidipus skin.
I was going to say various sacks and bladders, but sure.
Kathunkle picked up the crystal ball that held the essence of Abacus P. Grumbler, and when he set it atop the staff, tendrils of wood grew from the base to hold the crystal ball in place.
Walkie-talkie around the blocky,
recited Abacus, a spell he and his friend Miss Misty had developed long ago to help people whose bodies had trouble moving or speaking. And the staff grew little spectral legs and started skipping around the study.
Wonderful! Oh, Kathunkle, now we can finally leave each other alone for a minute,
said Abacus, turning on his spiritual heels to see that Kathunkle was already long gone.
Glad you enjoy it, bye.
Humming contentedly to himself, Abacus bustled about.
I'm so content.
Cleaning up his study with new ghostly arms that sprung out from the staff.
I'm going to recycle this box.
Out of the box fell a folded packaging slip. All Abacus could read was the big red word warning.
Warning indeed. This glossy paper could cause someone to slip.
And stretching out his ethereal hand, he crumpled up the paper and tossed it in the recycling, never seeing the rest of Cramazon's warning. Abacus woke the next morning to a knock on his study's door.
Abacus, it's me, Miss Misty, the other teacher at the observatorium, who Mr. Eric hasn't mentioned in about 300 episodes, and I probably didn't even sound this way in the first episode.
Yes, Miss Misty, my old friend, a powerful sorceress who's accompanied me on many a magical adventure that the children at home just haven't heard.
Miss Misty opened the door. She looked like a tall, willowy, blue-skinned elven woman, if such a person were made of billowing mist. It used to be difficult for her to do things like open a door. But with a lot of practice and a little help from her friend Abacus, she'd learned to move around the world just fine. And she wanted to make sure that her friend, trapped in a crystal ball, would be able to make it to the Sorcerer's Symposium.
I was just coming by to see if you needed help getting to the Sorcerer's Symposium.
Yes, Mr. Eric already covered that. But as you can see, I've got a magic staff that lets me get around again.
Well, ain't that fine. But I hope you don't mind me joining you.
Of course not. You've accompanied me to the Sorcerer's Symposium every year.
Abacus's staff was clunking around the office, and Misty noticed that his spectral arms and legs weren't fully under his control yet. In fact, in trying to clean his study, Abacus had honestly made more of a mess.
That's because I was looking for my speech, of course.
Now, how'd you manage to write a speech if you only just got hands?
I had Kathunkle write it for me, and here it is in some sort of language of horrifying arcane symbols
that makes my mind start to unravel the longer I look at them.
And we're just gonna stop looking at those right now,
said Miss Misty, gently pulling the parchment away.
He must have written your speech down in Eldritch, a language that predates existence.
Oh, not Eldritch. They say the spelling, pronunciation, and grammar of that language make even slightly less sense than English.
I know.
So what are you gonna do about your speech?
I have a remarkable plan.
Okay.
From now until the moment my speech begins, I'm going to imagine all the worst possible things that could happen.
Okay.
And then, no matter how many of those bad things happen, I won't be disappointed. And with that, Abacus bumped into his study door once, twice, thrice, before finally managing to open it and walk through. You see, I imagined never being able to open the door and missing the symposium altogether. So things are already going better than planned.
So it seems,
said Miss Misty, following her old friend out the door.
And by old friend, you mean?
That you've been friends for a long time, Abacus.
Just checking.
Miss Misty knew her friend wasn't exactly thinking clearly. When Abacus had first discovered her, she was a wisp of vapor, brought to life by a child's imagination, but unsure how to move through the world. He'd been very patient and caring as she faced the many challenges of being a vapor in a world designed for solid people. So she tried to give Abacus a little space and a little time to figure out this new half-wood, half-ghostly limbed body.
Who knew stairs would be such a challenge when you suddenly lack toes?
Said Abacus, who is still struggling to leave the observatorium.
You're right, Abacus, it is not easy. But look, you just gave yourself little ghost toes. So I guess you're figuring it out.
Oh, so I did. Now let's see,
Abacus thought aloud, while taking the stone steps that led down from his tower.
How could I embarrass myself or cause a magical catastrophe? Oh yes, I could say something embarrassing and then cause a magical catastrophe.
I'm not sure this is the healthiest exercise, Abacus. Have you ever tried visualizing the best possible outcome?
You mean getting my hopes up? How would that ever prepare me for disappointment?
One could argue the only thing that prepares you for disappointment is learning how to cope with our emotions.
Oh, very good.
Thank you.
I could get so disappointed that I'm unable to cope with my feelings and I turn everyone into axolotls.
My, your anxiety is very creative.
And thank you.
Before long, they'd arrived at the Sortress, a magical fortress of sorcery that had stood near the center of Nuwat City since before the city existed.
Since when did half of the Sortress become a Cremazon warehouse?
Since everyone started ordering off a Cremazon every day.
Right.
Abacus was feeling nervous. More nervous, in fact, now than before. And as he stared through the Sortress, he saw, on one side of the Great Hall, dozens of stands and kiosks where various magic users sold their wares and showed off their spells, while, on the other half, many tall, towering cases stood full of boxes, carrying countless items that many workers quickly and silently sorted through and carried away. But the last thing he noticed was the most surprising of all.
Miss Misty, is my crystal eye deceiving me, or is everyone here a monster?
Well, not everyone. You got some superheroes, some ninjas, a few sharks, axolotl there. A lot of TV movie characters.
I was expecting to present myself to my peers, not a bunch of spooky creatures. Oh, don't worry about that one bit,
said one of the sharks, who had seemed to grow a pair of legs.
Excuse me, but when a shark swims up and tells you not to worry, it kind of makes me feel like I should worry. Hey, I'm not a real shark, and these aren't real monsters. They're all just wearing Cremazon costumes. I help deliver them.
Papa Lou, is that you?
If you say so, Miss Misty, we offered a discount so all these spellcasters could enjoy Grandma Olm's amazing costumes. Oh, I see. So they're not dangerous or anything? No more dangerous than a bunch of people who are given impossibly powerful magic and abilities by the costumes they wear. Well, that's the Sorceress's clock tower chiming too, which I believe is when Abacus P. Grumbler is supposed to give his amazing keynote speech.
Oh, yes.
And Abacus started headed through the crowd on ghostly legs that were somehow even more wobbly than before. When...
Ouch, I think. I actually can't feel anything. But you should watch where you're going, Alabaster.
Alabaster Zero, the dungaree detective, wearing a rhinestone-encrusted jean jacket and cool two-tone sunglasses, helped pick Abacus's staff off the ground.
I am so sorry, Abacus. It's just I'm looking for a villain who may or may not be working out of a Cramazon warehouse. Or possibly it's all just in my imagination.
I'm sorry, Alabaster. I really can't help you. I have my own problems right now.
I'm not gonna catch him, and everything's gonna go wrong.
I'm going to deliver a terrible speech, and then all of these monsters will turn on me.
All right, you two. I can tell you're both dealing with a lot of anxious energy,
said Miss Misty as she floated up to them and let her calming mist cool each of them down just a bit.
But you know that the feelings of anxiety and excitement are so close that your body can hardly tell the difference?
What are you talking about?
Yes, please stop interrupting us. We're trying to worry.
But just assume for a minute that you've done enough worrying. Now why don't you start picturing the absolute best thing that could possibly happen and try to get excited for that opportunity?
But if it doesn't work out that way...
I'll be disappointed.
Just try for a minute, Abacus. Visualize your speech going well. Alabaster Zero, visualize yourself
finding this villain.
Turn that anxious energy into excitement.
Oh, Miss Misty, I always appreciate your calm wisdom.
She is a credit to the observatorium.
Thanks, Abacus. Now just keep picturing the best that could happen, because they're almost done introducing you.
Oh, right.
And Abacus hustled up to the stage.
Thanks again, Miss Misty. I am going to find Wardrobe, or Papaloo, or whoever he is.
Oh, I just saw Papaloo.
In a compost ghost costume, I know.
Don't you mean shark costume?
Shark costume. I've got to go.
And as Alabaster Zero went to track down his new nemesis, Abacus P. Grumbler got up to the little raised stage and leaned his crystal ball toward a microphone atop a podium. He envisioned himself giving the best speech he'd ever given and looking out at the audience to see wide-eyed listeners. And as excitement began to take over, he felt passion and motivation, and he opened his ghostly mouth inside his crystal ball head.
Friends, neighbors, sorcerers, I wish to speak to you today of the truest magic of all,
choice.
You see, when I stepped into the sorceress today, I saw before me a bunch of monsters and unfamiliar people. I could have chosen to fear, and like casting a magic spell, choosing to let my fear win would have made you all more fearsome, at least to me. But instead, I choose to live my life with curiosity, kindness, and thoughtfulness.
Interrupted someone in a large minotaur costume.
I actually can't understand you, but if you choose to listen for another moment...
said someone wearing a werewolf costume, who began chewing on some staffs for sale at a nearby booth.
Yes, choice is like magic, and you can choose to do something awful, like chewing on someone else's wares, or you could choose... Yum, yum, yum,
yum, yum, yum, yum, and someone dressed as compost ghost started eating whole stands and kiosks.
It's like someone's cast some sort of spell, causing you to make terrible choices. Which presents an interesting magical dilemma for...
Destructimus. Arithmomixamis!
Arithmometer? And Abacus's dad, who was dressed as a dragon, started breathing fire all over the sorceress.
What is going on?
Okay, where'd you get that staff, Abacus?
Asked Miss Misty.
Oh, Kathunkle bought it for me, off of Cremazon.
And did it come with any instructions or dire warnings or anything like that?
Oh, yes. One paper read, "Warning," when it fell on the floor. So I quickly threw it away so that no one would trip on it. Quite a useful warning, really.
But Miss Misty had already drawn out her H2 phone and was looking for the staff on Cremazon's website.
Here it is. Anytime you talk about doing magic, the staff will make that happen.
So when I was talking about magic turning people to monsters...
That's what happened.
And when I mentioned that thing about magically making the worst choices possible...
Yeah, it seems like that also happened.
On the plus side, everyone seemed to really enjoy the speech, right?
Well, it really did have a powerful impact upon them.
Splendid!
And you're not concerned about the magical mayhem you have unleashed?
Of course I am, Miss Misty. And I have learned to read warnings a little more closely. But now, I'm excited to solve this magical catastrophe and give everyone back the power of choice.
Before monsters
take over the world. Yes, exactly.
Well then, let's get to it. The story's over. Okay.
Nia, thank you so much for your question, and I hope you all enjoyed your story. Have you ever felt really nervous before a big event? Have you ever tried visualizing all the wonderful things that could happen? How else could you turn nervousness into excitement in the future? Maybe you can practice telling a story in front of your friends or family members. Or maybe you'll come up with your own confidence-building activity and share it with us. Now, I'm also going to play Elle's question right now.
My name's Elle. I like superheroes and Ninjago. And my what if question is, what if Wardrobe dressed up as a shark to get past Alabaster Zero?
I just loved that detail so much, Elle. And I wonder if any of our other listeners knew that that shark was secretly Wardrobe. I'd like to thank Karen O'Keefe, my co-creator, Craig Martinson for our theme song, my producer, Miss Lynn, and all you kids at home who know that confidence, just like curiosity, takes a lot of practice. So keep visualizing amazing moments. And until we meet again, keep wondering.
You're listening to ICANN. Oregon Coast Aquarium is a journey from seafloor to shore, and we're offering a wave of new experiences. This summer, you can hone your climbing skills in their new nature play area. Then head over to their outdoor amphitheater to meet a cast of animal ambassadors, or view their headwaters feature to follow a raindrop's voyage from the mountains to the sea. You can plan your next adventure at aquarium.org.